away. He's just got a gammy leg. He'll be with us in a second. But we saw him. We saw Jesus. And he's alive. Those women, they weren't kidding. They were, it was true. We've seen him. We've talked with him. We've walked with him. And he's alive. We didn't realize it at first. It took us ages to work it out. I mean, we just couldn't think straight. I know you're thinking right now that I can't be thinking straight, you know, that I'm a bit crazy, right? But I promise you, it's true. We were thinking and we were thinking on that road. We're thinking so hard and we were just so devastated. We were thinking about all the ways in which we'd been hurt and the ways in which all our hopes have been dashed. I mean, you know what it's like for us Emmaus people. You know what it's like about how our parents in their generation, there was this massive rebellion and the Romans just squashed them flat. You know about how the Romans burnt our village to the ground and then rebuilt it for their own purposes and called it Nicopolis, Victory City. And there was a message that they had for any one of us that ever wanted to complain. They would just annihilate us. They crucified 2,000 people and every single cross was put along the road to Emmaus, to our home. We can still smell the stench of death. Even though those crosses have been taken down, I can still see them as I walk home and smell the stench of death and the devastation and the despair. 2,000 crosses. So much defeat. We felt so defeated. And I know that we all have felt so defeated. I mean, with Jesus, we had such high hopes, you know. He was a miracle worker, but he didn't magic himself out of this. He was a healer, but his wounds killed him. He was a moral leader, but the leaders of this age led him like a lamb to slaughter and die for every promise that we thought we had. Despair and defeat. Every promise seemed broken and empty. What good was cross 2001 to us? I guess grief really clouds your thinking, you know? It's a bit like when you're looking for something in your house and you're looking everywhere frantically and it's actually right in the obvious place right in front of you, but the panic of losing it and the frustration of not finding it means that you don't see it. The grief that was overwhelming us meant that we just couldn't see what was right in front of us. So there we are. Walking along, absolutely filled with this grief. And there's someone that comes along. And because of that, our consuming, all self-absorption, we don't actually look at him properly. But he looks at us and sees our depression and says, "Hey, why so sad?" I couldn't believe it. I mean, everyone knew what had been happening during those past few days. It was a spectacle. It was a gross injustice. It was an uproar. It was a huge event. It was a political bust-up. And here we are grieving it. I mean, you'd have to be blind and deaf and living under a rock not to know what had been going on. Don't you just leave grieving people be? I just wanted to let it go, you know. I just wanted to just let it go. I thought maybe he was a bit, I don't know, he was just insensitive or a bit stupid or terminally curious. But Cleopas was getting really angry. He turned around and said, "What is wrong with you? Have you been living under a rock? Do you have no clue of what things have been going on?" We thought we were the experts. We were Jesus' disciples. We were his close friends. We'd walked with him. We'd lived with him. We'd travelled with him to Jerusalem and we had seen him die. We were the experts. And he turns around and goes, "What things?" Well, it all just came pouring out. All of our hopes all of our dreams. We hoped that Jesus would be the one person that could lead us to a rebellion without 2,000 crosses. We hoped that he would restore our Jewish identity. We hoped that he was a prophet that was as big and as godly as Moses. And it's been 3 days and we just can't fathom it. We can't work it out. And to add to our confusion, the women in our group, they went to the tomb and found it empty, and they came rushing back, gabbling on about angels and Jesus being alive. And we checked it out. And the tomb's empty, all right. But there's no sign of Jesus. I'm telling Jesus that there's no sign of Jesus. Do you reckon he was laughing inside or what? And then he insulted us. He called us slow of heart and slow of mind. Slow of heart and slow of mind. Basically, he said we were stupid for not putting together all the things that we had just told him. I mean, for instance, Moses, this amazing leader, the one that led the people from slavery through to freedom, and was this kind of seen as this go-between between God and the people. But they had these tents that they had built as the presence of God that they were carrying with them everywhere they traveled. They didn't need a go-between. They needed God's presence with them. They needed Emmanuel. They needed, as they traveled, God with them. Hint. The prophets. Oh, the prophets that we talked about. If Jesus really was a prophet, it doesn't matter that he was persecuted. That doesn't mean that his message was inauthentic. You know, the prophets were all persecuted. Some of them were even killed. It doesn't mean that his message was inauthentic. In fact, the fact that he was killed probably means that it was just a little bit more authentic, that whole mission thing that he had. And we started to put it together as he started to talk about how Jesus had said that suffering was necessary, that the Messiah would have to suffer. And the more we thought about it, we realized that a Messiah that doesn't suffer can't help us. Can't know how to help us, can't have that same experience that we've had that means that he can offer something real and good. Yeah. We thought we knew the Hebrew scriptures really well. I mean, we'd read them all our lives. We'd really spent time on them. But we just couldn't put it together. Sometimes you need someone's perspective. And in this moment, we were so confined. Our stress and our grief had confined us to our own moment, our own suffering. We had such a small perspective, but he had this enormous perspective. He was running through with us how over thousands of years God was working for the good of his people. Adam and Eve, even when they had to leave the Garden of Eden, they were still in God's care. Abraham, thinking he had no future, looking up at the stars and God saying, here is your future. Look and imagine with me. Then if you look at Moses and the people of Israel, stuck in slavery, but that Red Sea miracle that leads them off to freedom. And David, who was smaller than his brothers, but bigger in faith, enough to slay a giant and lead the people through to prosperity and security. And then the prophets, who called the people to live justly. And when they fell, they called them to repentance and led them to a promise of a future ahead of them. And then this promise of a son of David that would come. This guy had such a perspective. And we thought that we knew the scriptures, but sometimes, well, all the time, you need the Holy Spirit. You need God to interpret the scriptures for you. We were using the scriptures to interpret what had happened to Jesus, but he was interpreting the scriptures with us. And we remembered. We remembered the story about the suffering servant who suffers like a lamb led to the slaughter and dies, but God raises him up. We remembered that symbol of a cross with a snake on it, the cross that was held over the people of Israel for their healing of their diseases. We realized it was all through. It was there, right in front of us, right in front of our faces. And somehow, as this person was talking to us, it warmed our hearts and it lifted our spirits, and we thought we might actually have some hope. Who was this man? Where did he come from? Where was he going? We suddenly realized we were getting really close to home and he was heading off in another direction. And I'm so glad that we had the presence of mind to invite him to our home. We wanted to have more time with him. We didn't think we'd ever have another chance. And so we invited him to our home. And I'm so glad we did, because that's when things started to make sense. Over a meal, of course. Where else did we know Jesus the best? Where else did we see him the most radical, the most confronting, the most compassionate, the most gracious? Over a meal. And so we offered him hospitality. When you sit and relax with Jesus, it just changes everything. We offered him hospitality in our home, and he was meant to be our guest, and we gave him food, and we gave him shelter, and he sat at our table, but somehow in the midst of it, the tables turned. And he took what we offered him and became our host. He was the one that took the bread. He was the one that broke it and blessed it. And we realized at that moment, we've seen him do this before. We've seen this blessing, this breaking before. We realized it was him. Here we are thinking we're offering him hospitality, but he had become our host. We couldn't believe it. It really was true. He really was alive, and there really is a future, and we can really keep going. It's going to be okay. And we were so excited and just rejoicing in it, and he was gone. Just gone. Somehow in an ecstatic joy, he'd left. And we thought, this is amazing. We have to come and tell you. So I'm here. I'm so tired because I've walked all the way from Jerusalem to Emmaus and then run uphill to you right now. And where is Cleopas? He's taking his time. I'm going to have to check on him. But I want you to know it's true. The women weren't wrong. He really is alive. He really is with us. And so let's sit down. Let's tell the stories. Let's remember what we know of him. And he will be here, our host and our guest. And our food, because with him feeding us, there is something eternal in that. And we can get this party started, and it can go on and on and on. I'm just going to check on Claire. What's wrong? Are you all right? The story that we've just soaked ourselves in has some different themes, and I'd like us to just spend a moment reflecting on that. The first is of defeat. You know, the people of Emmaus lived with reminders of their defeat all around them. Do you know someone who lives with reminders of defeat all around them? Maybe you are living with some reminders of defeat. Another theme is heart and head. Different people process things different ways. And Jesus called the true travellers slow of heart and slow of mind. Which one leads you in your faith? Is it your feelings or your thinkings? what's good about that. Any problems with it? Another theme is stories. They told stories. That huge, amazing story of God working for the people's good. What stories are your stories that remind you that God is with you all along? The other big theme is hospitality. Have you had a time where you've had a sense of God that is present while you've been offering hospitality to somebody else? When was the last time that you offered hospitality to somebody else? Could Jesus come to your house?